Synthaholics, it's the Red Table Podcast.
Smile is started.
Welcome to Synthaholics. Thank you so much for downloading this episode. I am Aaron O'Brien. With me is David Duncan.
Hi, Dave. I'm embarrassed to be here.
We also have Holly Michelle. Hello, Holly.
Heyo.
Heyo.
We're all sitting inside. Hope you are too.
We also have a very special guest. We have Jason Youngbluth. He is a comic book creator. He just recently came out with a book, Kobayashi Maru, which is a takeoff of Star Trek and an offbeat crew, and I want him to talk about his book. Jason, it's great to have you.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Welcome.
Yeah.
Can't you Jason, say live long and prosper or something Trekkie?
Oh, that's
you
how
can
we close.
Say whatever
usually.
You like.
Oh, okay.
You can say
how
what
nerdy are we, man?
So, Jason, you don't know. You probably don't even remember, but I have met you a few times at cons, and I think I met you way back in like 1996 or 95.
Oh my God,
Aaron's been stalking you for so long,
and that was at a con in Buffalo, and you were doing Forever Eve.
Yeah, oh my God, you really do know me. Yeah, that was my, along with my friend Tim Shea, who wrote and published that book, that was my first, the first comic book I ever drew for publication.
I have the first three issues. So, obviously I've followed you through Deep Fried, and I don't have your full collection of Weapon Brown, but I have a smattering of different issues that you put out during that time. So.
Oh, that's great. Should I have known that you knew about my work before I contacted you?
Yes, no. No.
Aaron is discreet when he stalks.
No, yeah, I don't know. When I'm at cons, especially with artists and writers, I'm just very kind of just like, hello, sir. Yeah. I'd like to buy one, sir. Very good, sir. Goodbye.
That's the appropriate level of deference that you should take with all small indie creators.
I don't want to be too, I'm with that with everybody, to tell you the truth. I don't want to get on anybody's nerves unless they want to talk to me like really bad. And that's barely ever happened. So it's good.
Please,
yeah,
sir,
I have
some more like Oliver Twist.
Can
the
I
only
have some
one you should be bowing and scraping before is Stuart Sager. Anyone else, you can, you know, treat them like they're common barstool scum.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Conventions. I've never seen a larger scum of hide and villainy.
That's pretty funny.
But
that's Star Wars, buddy. Wrong
podcast. Yeah, right?
Oh, God damn it. I can't think of an appropriate quote from Star Trek. There's too many. None are iconic like that one.
So Jason's been doing comics for quite some time, and he's got a large body of work that has
a large body.
But he's got a lot going on, and this new book, the Kobayashi Maru, is like I said, kind of a playoff of Star Trek. Why don't you let our listeners know what the book's about?
Sure. Well, the premise was I started thinking one. Well, this was after I did Weapon Brown. Weapon Brown is my epic parody of Charlie Brown after the apocalypse. So I did this huge 416-page graphic novel that lampooned the entire history of newspaper comic strips, and it's pretty successful. So I was like, okay, I kind of like playing in other people's sandboxes. And so who am I going to goof on next? And I'm a big Trekkie, so I thought, well, I would love to do. I would actually love to write Star Trek, as a lot of fans would, but that's probably not likely. But nevertheless, I was thinking one day, it's like, well, it's interesting that in sci-fi, circles, there are a lot of famous spaceships, but they usually all have an image to go along with them. And the only one that really doesn't, that we've all heard of, is the Kobayashi Maru, because it's only a fictional ship within a fictional universe. And so I thought, well, a story about the let's imagine there was a real Kobayashi Maru in the Star Trek universe, and let's imagine the goings-on of that crew leading up to an actual no-win situation that becomes the basis for the scenario in Star Trek. But I didn't want to do fan fiction. I wasn't interested in, for numerous reasons, for doing an actual story set within the trademark Star Trek universe. But the more I thought of it, I thought, well, what if I could come up with a take on my concept that allowed the readers to sort of imagine that it was set within Star Trek, but sort of like a skewed view of Star Trek, not right. entirely a parody, somewhere between a parody and an homage and a fanfic. And so I imagined a story of a very a working man's spaceship called the Kajira Maru, and here's where you start to see where I start to play around with elements from Star Trek that try to avoid being a direct ripoff of Star Trek. So if you if anyone's familiar with the Kobayashi Maru scenario as it was introduced in Wrath of Khan, they show some stats on the monitor screen about who's running the ship, what the complement is, and everything. And so the captain of the ship is a guy named Kajiro Vance. And I thought, okay, well, let's build a story off of just what we know from these few scraps of information about the Kobayashi Maru. So I imagined that the ship is actually called the Kajira Maru, and that I spun out a tale in my head about a large corporation set in the future that does space shipping and other things, and then leading on to the premise of a mutiny that takes place on that ship, and then the adventures of the basically pirate crew that takes over the ship. Spinning the story outwards, I basically thought that it would be fun to take a bunch of elements from Star Trek that have never been thoroughly explored, at least to my own liking, and do sort of a twist on them and basically reimagine a bunch of stuff from Star Trek, but just sort of seen from a slightly different angle, and just see where it takes me. I could introduce a lot of references to Star Trek, but use them in a slightly comical way, or a slightly more intriguing way, a different way to look at the Orion Syndicate, a different way to look at the I forget the names of the alien, the half black, half white aliens. Who's going to correct me and tell me what they're called? The Charons?
I don't remember their names, to tell you the truth. There's only two of them left, so.
Yeah, I think they were like Charon or something was the name of the planet they came from.
Yeah, let this last be your last battlefield. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. A great episode, and I thought, well, there's something amusing about it's obviously quite on the nose, and yet still very satisfying that they're exactly half black and half white, and I thought there's some comedy potential in that as well. Man's first encounter with the Vulcans, the Klingon Empire, do a sort of a wacky, almost ghetto version of Star Trek, seen from the point of view of the heart and soul of the notion is of the concept is, what would the Federation look like from the point of view of people living in the neutral zone? They would be neither, they would not be enamored of their the human paradise. They would not necessarily think the Klingons were the worst thing in the world. And I just sort of spun a story out of that.
I love it. And it's hard to reimagine a whole universe. I mean, it's okay to tinker with the ideas, but it's hard to try to reimagine things and rework it. And I think you did an excellent balance with this book here, because you know what the references are. You've got the Klingon, you've got the Starfleet Federation ship, and that's you get the references right away. And then even the beaming sequence, you've done a very comical job of how they kind of like work in strips.
Yeah,
yeah, it's pretty great.
They sort of get peeled apart as they're beamed from ship to ship.
Yeah, it's pretty funny. And you even have like the Geordi character with the gigantic technical visor compared to Geordi's more sleek.
His name is Saturn.
How do you come up?
Saturn
Man. How do you come up with your ideas? You obviously done Weapon Brown, and you had fun with playing with the Charlie Brown Peanuts universe or realm. You did Deep Fried. I'm for so many years, and I mean, you have definitely a comedy streak in you. So, like, how do you come up with your ideas? Do you just sit there and just toy with ideas all day long, or how's that work for you?
Yeah, well, I mean, different ideas come to me in different ways. And in this specific instance, like I said, the initial nub was I'd like to write Star Trek. And then it's like, but I can't. But if I want to do something that I can actually publish, I can't do real Star Trek. But then if it's not in my own mind, if it's not real Star Trek, then it's sort of like, why am I even doing the Star Trek reference at all? So I like to create things that have a kind of tension to them, where it's like, okay, how much can I get away with and still convince myself that I'm actually doing exactly what I want and yet somehow getting away with it, right? And then in this case, the real intriguing thing for me, besides the kind of space crime story that I wanted to tell, was I love world building. I think my favorite movies are things that I think have a lot of really good subtle world building. And I thought one thing I've always liked about thought would be interesting to do with Star Trek that they haven't done yet, but they might someday do it, is more of an exploration about what Earth culture is really like. We don't really get much of that because the story is set on spaceships, and for obvious reasons they try to steer away from like explaining the economy of Earth in the future. How is it that all races and religions somehow work together in peace? It would be very difficult to pull that off without tripping over your own feet. But with my story, I thought, well, here's an opportunity for me to work in some of that world building and explore some of the ideas that Star Trek never does. And in the meantime, I can also do the other thing which I like doing, which is taking someone else's idea. So in this, it hasn't been explored in my comic yet, but the Orion Syndicate is obviously the sometimes referred to Cosa Nostra of outer space.
Oh, that would be so great. Because you hear about them all throughout like the latter half of DS9. Not one Orion is seen in the entire series.
Yeah.
I mean, the only time we really see them is the original series and Enterprise. Those are the only times we really see them.
That's kind of sad.
So I have so my story is based on the idea that this is a crew of mutineers who get in bed with the Orion Syndicate, and trouble ensues. And so obviously what I have to do next is like, okay, well, I know how Star Trek has done the Orion Syndicate. How can I do something that allows me to reference it but is also completely new? And so back to where do I get my ideas, it's when I create this sort of tension for myself that inspires me to come up with things that are, exciting to me and also sort of ride the line so I can have my cake and eat it too. And when I do those when I think in that way, I often come up with, things that, immediately or maybe even years later become fodder for stories. A lot of my comics that I've written or ideas I've come up with are the seventh generation evolutions of something I wanted to write for the X-Men when I was a kid, you know? So that's hopefully that answers the question.
It's cool. And I love that you're stretching out in this world. I mean, do you have like a length of a story that you're trying to go for, or do you plot that far ahead, or you just kind of just like go where you feel it's comfortable and then you kind of just either bring it to an end, or how do you plan that kind of?
Well, I usually have the broad strokes imagined, well, who knows? A story can ultimately, take its own course. With Kobayashi Maru, I had the initial structure. Several different key moments are clear in my head, and so I know that my story must ultimately journey from one point to another. And that's usually how my stories work. I have Several things that I know are going to be very integral to the overall structure, and that I also think are going to be very neat for the reader. And then I have to create the connective tissue that leads me to there. And the nuances of the story are what emerge as I move from basically from set piece to set piece. You know, so in Kobayashi Maru, which I've only done one issue of so far, I know that. We're going to find out, about what life on Earth is like since the aliens that I call the blanks, but which are my placeholders for the Vulcans. Yeah, we're going to find out why they're called the blanks. So and of course how they can still be the Vulcans if you just sort of squint, you know, and look at them. So what life is like with the under partnership with the blanks. What the tension is between the UFED, which I call it, the sort of corporate federation. It's called UFED, not the United Federation. The tension between the UFED and the Klugs. The Klugs, of course, are the Klingons. And then often what I'll do is I'll come up with names in this comic that are basically slang, so that everyone in part of space that I set this in, they have slang for the aliens that we're familiar with, so that they can be the Klingons if you imagine it, but they only call them the Klugs because that's sort of like street talk for how people interact with each other in this dirty corner of space.
They originally wanted to call the Klingon planet Kling. So yeah. It's pretty close.
They did that on Star Trek once. They mentioned Worf was talking to a Klingon, and they referred to the elders of Kling are picking the meat off our bones, but they never referred to that planet as Kling again. I don't think it's always Kronos since then.
Yeah.
They've come for some changes over the Klingons over the years, for
Ronald
sure.
D. Moore, baby.
Yeah. But then ultimately, there's several things that I want to include, which. Besides being, as original as I can make them, they also want to harken back to Star Trek. So I'll be doing a storyline that involves the rescuing the whales. Which one was that?
The Voyage Home.
So this will be my skewed view take on the Voyage Home, including all the seminal moments. The Spock sacrifice and such. I want to include the Planet Killer spaceship from the original series. And so on and so on, leading up what I hope will be to the ultimate moment where the no-win situation, as I imagine it, plays out and resolves itself.
That's awesome. That's so much fun. I know, there's so much. There's a big world to get into, of course, too, especially you always see the shiny example of Star Trek universe, so you never often see the underbelly of everything, so... Yeah.
That itself is sort of one of the gags that I'm going to address, because if you read the comic, you notice that everyone's got sort of a heads up display that can float in front of their eyes. So they don't use communion. I figured let's imagine what the future is really going to be like. And by the, hundreds of years from now, the idea that you'll carry around a phone or something is probably unlikely. Right. So everyone is sort of plugged into the network. And to the point where they can actually, adjust what they're seeing and sort of skin their own environments. And I'm going to do a gag where they go onto like this grimy space station and the captain of the ship is sort of scrolling through the different skins she could use to actually engage with the environment. And one of the skins will look like Next Generation, and one of the skins will look like the classic series. And then ultimately she says, I'm just going to go with a crappy skin. And that'll be what you see.
Right, right. That's awesome.
That's gonna be awesome.
That's fine.
Excuse me, guys. I gotta kind of geek out a little bit with Jason.
Should we leave the room?
Yeah, please.
We'll cover our ears.
See us, geek.
So you have your style of art. It's ranged quite a bit over the years I've seen you, but especially this issue reminds me a lot of Mort Drucker.
Oh, really? From, the great.
Yeah.
Just passed.
Yeah. I mean, it just reminds me. It's not totally like his, but what are your influences artistic wise? Because you are, I've seen you gone from, Deep Fried, which is more, cartoony. There's the characters are more cartoony, into Weapon Brown that gets, some very fierce looking drawings, very dramatic. You know, so how do you approach your artwork, and where's your big influences?
Oh, so many, and I'm always trying to marry them together. I sometimes feel like I've got too many styles going at once, and some of them are easier to do, but then somewhat less satisfying for action comics. And then the action comic work, I love when I get a very satisfying page, but then it's like, boy, it really took me a long time to get it. So I'm always trying to find a harmony between, you know, sort of my more rubbery style and my more gritty style. My influences are manifold. Frank Miller, John Byrne, Bill Sienkiewicz, Evan Dorkin, Robert Crumb, Mort Drucker, who you just mentioned, he's in there too. And too many, Frank Quitely is a guy who who's over. Great. So there's a little bit of all these people in everything I draw. I'm trying to think. I'd be remiss if I didn't mention my great uncle, Bob Donovan, who was a cartoonist and worked in – he was the cartoonist on the Stumpy Smiths comic strip for a number of years. There's always a little touch of him in there too, because I practiced drawing from his work when I was a child.
Wow.
So a lot of everybody. And I guess as far as where it's heading, I'm always – like I said, I'm always trying to find artwork that is you know, visually appealing to me, but that doesn't take me forever to grind out. And yeah. I'm actually going to be working the next installment of Kobayashi Maru is where I'm going to really start bringing that together and try to make it maybe slightly more comical in execution, but still realistic and engaging in the storytelling so that I can put this out in a timely manner.
Yeah, that's a hard thing to do, because you can go like totally into the nitty gritty details for every little panel and page, but then it takes you forever to finish the page, and then you can't get the book out in time. Right.
I'm a one man crew, so I've got to do pencils, inks, letters, scanning. Every part of it is something I have to do. So it's not like an assembly line going on.
Mm-hmm. Right. Exactly. I've followed your work for quite a few years now. So it's great to hear some of those, influences, you know, and I'm sure, I mean, like you said, there's about 100 different ones you could probably rattle off too, but those are probably the ones that just come to mind.
I'm always sort of, when I'm drawing something, I'm always acutely aware of who I've set up as the gold standard for completing my panel. You know, I'm doing a panel. It's like, okay, how would John Byrne do this? Or, how would Frank Miller pull this trick off? And, you know, that's, and so they're always over my shoulder, these people.
That's awesome. I love it. I'm very excited that we got a chance to talk about this, and we'll put it at the end as well. But right now, why don't you just give everyone just the information on how to contact you and how to order your book and all that good stuff.
Oh, certainly. Well, you can find me on my major website is whatisdeepfried.com. And I do weekly strips and other stuff there. So that's where you want to go for a weekly dose of my cartoons, whatisdeepfried.com. If you're interested in Weapon Brown, go to weaponbrown.com and you can purchase the graphic novel from there. I'm on Twitter at IamDeathRay, all one word. I'm on the Instagram at, hold on a second, I'll tell you in a moment, because I forget what my actual Instagram name is. Let's check it out. It is, come on. Death_ray_graphics on Instagram. And, also, if you just want to go and shop, deathraystore.com.
Awesome. Cool. I definitely encourage people to check those out. I mean, there's, like I said, he's got a lot of work to catch up. The Weapon Brown stuff. I mean, I've seen, I've had friends that have the Weapon Brown collection. What do you say? It's 400 some pages.
416 pages. Yep.
It's a tome, so yeah. it's not anything to sneeze at. So it's a lot of fun. Some crazy stuff that basically the character Charlie Brown goes through after whatever you want to call it, the end of the world, post apocalyptic. So yeah. it's
Charlie funny. Brown beats Fallout.
Yeah, it's hilarious. It's absolutely hilarious. It's great. There's so much there's so much fun stuff to talk about with that just by itself. So maybe we'll get into that maybe in another episode in the future.
If you've ever wanted to see Charlie Brown go mano a mano with Calvin and Hobbes, this is the book for you.
Yep. In fact, I think one of the books I have is Hobbes, the cover is Hobbes, and he's all blood coming out of his mouth.
Yeah,
I think.
Oh, yeah, the black and white one with the doll with blood coming out. Yeah, yeah, that's a popular image.
yeah, that's the one I got. It's him as the stuffed animal, not as. But yeah. So it's good stuff. So definitely check out his stuff, and we'll give you all that information in the show notes, and we'll also put it in the. We'll talk about it at the end too. So this episode, we are going back to Star Trek Enterprise. We start talking about the third season,
two years ago.
Was it 2 years ago?
It's been a while. Like we had a complete year between episode one and episode. I think the last episode of season two and episode one of season three. I think we had almost a year.
Are you saying that it's been a long road getting? From
it's
that
been
year?
A long. Yes.
Oh,
it's the joke I do always.
Oh, I should have listened to more episodes.
Well, every time we talk about Enterprise, but we don't talk about Enterprise often, so you have to go back. Go back for those. I guess I can just sit this one out. You're making my jokes for me.
So, we did the first, we did the beginning of, the end of season two, which led into season three with the attack of the Zindi on Earth, and then them chasing them down into the expanse. And now, unfortunately, we are in episode three. This is Extinction. We're so sorry. We're so sorry, Jason, that you had to come on to this episode.
I'm so mad you made me watch that episode. I was like, which episode is the Extinction? Oh, not this one. Oh,
I know.
It's just so sad. I don't know. We hadn't talked about Enterprise in a while, so it was just like the dice, man.
We're trying to catch up.
We'll have
up
you
with
back on. We'll have
stuff.
You back on for one that's not Enterprise.
I mean, it fits. It's a pandemic. I think it's a fine episode to talk about at this time.
And oddly enough, I think wasn't it Holly that wanted to do a pandemic episode?
I did. I wanted you guys to compile a pandemic list.
A pandemic playlist.
So people could listen to all your past episodes of all of your discussions about those from the past. I thought that would have been a great idea.
We talked about pandemics much. We had robots gone wild, holograms gone wild.
The pandemic one, that's a good theme. There's the one where Troy gets has an arranged marriage, and he has to cure a pandemic, which apparently a pandemic that leaves you alive for decades. Great weapon.
I think we did Plague Bride before. Is that what it was called?
I think we called it Plague Bride.
That's like episode like six or something like that. We're in an hour.
Yeah, a whole species that has been decimated by a weapon a genetically engineered virus that doesn't kill you very much and leaves you in pretty good health.
And then there's the other one where like all those people like they couldn't their plague was they had not enough genetic diversity to keep making children. They just steal the children. When the bell breaks.
That's another one. I forgot that's a Next Gen one, too. I can't remember that. That's first season, too. It's hard.
When the bell breaks. That was one of Faith's favorite episodes for whatever reason.
Yeah. If you want to go back and listen to our first couple episodes of The Zindi and the Anomaly, that's episode 238 and 239. So that's going back a little bit. So because we are now on. This is what, 264?
That wasn't too long ago then.
Well, no, but with the first episode of season, we had talked about the last episode of season two, like over a year ago.
Yeah. Right. But anyway, so here we are.
Here we are.
I guess we didn't call that episode Plague Bride because I'm searching. I'm not seeing it.
I can't remember. It's so long ago. I can barely remember. That was like 4 or 5 years ago.
That was season one of Synthaholics.
Yeah, exactly. So this is Enterprise Season 3, Episode 3, first aired September 24th, 2003. We start off this episode with these alien creature getting chased, and it's chased down by these people in like suits with flamethrowers, and they just torch this poor alien. There's no other explanation given, and then from there, we cut right into "It's Been a Long Road."
And it's the first time, at least when it was televised, that Star Trek appeared on the title screen. Because before, they were trying to distance themselves from Star Trek, and they just called it Enterprise. Because that's how you distance yourself from Star Trek.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
this is such a bold departure from Stardust. We need to be our own thing.
I know. This episode is directed by LeVar Burton. So.
Oh.
And the
this is LeVar Burton remembering his favorite episode, the one where he was infected with a plague that turned him into another alien species.
Yes. But the thing is, on Memory Alpha, there's not a whole lot about this episode. And he said he felt bad that he had to do this one. Like, I guess they're just handed a script. It's like, here you go. You're directing this one. He's like, really? I have to do this one. He said he was embarrassed. I was really trying to find Scott Bakula, and I wanted to know what he thought about this episode. I did not see his thoughts or Linda Park's thoughts. I was like, I get LeVar Burton being embarrassed to direct it, but he didn't have to wear the Neanderthal makeup and like act like a retard.
Well,
this episode should have been called the career-ending plague.
I know.
I think Extinction was right. If this show ended after this episode, I wouldn't have. I know it would have made sense.
I mean, think about it as an actor, though. They may have had a ton of fun.
They might have.
Yeah, we're supposed to have a ton of fun. Damn it, it's
we
for us.
Make it all about you, okay?
We did call the episode Plague Bride. It was episode 25, released August 30th, 2015.
Okay, well, are you saying our episode?
Yeah, we called it Plague Bride, okay. Parentheses Haven,
yeah.
Episode 25. So we did talk about that one way back when.
I know, that was a long time. But yeah, this is a hard episode to watch for sure. We jump back after that credit. It just seems so abrupt that we get this guy getting torched by flamethrowers, and then they come in with that soft music.
Oh, yeah. Enterprise. That was the first thing I noticed, too, is that is such an awkward transition.
You know, though? Maybe that's why. So I actually paid attention to the intro, and I was able to appreciate the intro this time. And I know that sounds really fucking stupid, because it's not a great intro. But
you just hate it all the time.
I do. I hate it. But when I watched it this time, I don't know, maybe it was that transition that was like, what? That made me actually watch it. And I actually kind of liked that it was like very, I want to say, you know, the Voyagers throughout the years, you know, sailing their ships and then transitioning into going out into outer space. I thought it was actually, I guess this time I watched it, I was like, oh, it's not a bad at least the visuals wasn't bad.
Yeah, I like the premise of that introduction. Although, can someone explain to me, there's one shot in that whole montage that I can't quite figure out. It's a shot of a spaceship seen from the rear that sort of looks like the Enterprise, but it's got like circular thrusters and it's heading towards some planet. It doesn't look like it's going at warp speed. It looks like it's just sort of cruising. And is that a shot from the show? Because I don't remember that scene appearing anywhere in the series.
No, it's a ship that precursors the Enterprise. It's just like an early exploration ship. It's oddly shot because it sort of looks like the Enterprise from behind, except for all the engines.
Yeah, it's a good shot, though. I mean, it's like, oh, is this from an upcoming episode or something? I'd like to know more about this series of ships.
Well, the thing is, they also showed like the NASA ship, like the N7 or the X-59 or whatever it was that never actually became a thing. I think it was the X-95. They show that ship before they get into Star Trek-y ships, and it's like, aw, I wish that would have become a real ship. That would have been cool, but it just got scrapped.
Remember when America was cool? We had like a whole space fleet.
Nope.
And then coming back.
Space
coming
Wars.
Back.
No.
So we're from there, we're jumping back into Enterprise, and this is where Tucker is getting his sleep rubs from T'Pol.
Ooh, do I have to take my foot and my shoes off? Here, eat this peach. Do it slow and sexual, please.
Yeah, that's not sexual.
Hmm. You're a lesbian,
they really, try to push Enterprise as a sexy show, and it's just like, it's kind of cringy sometimes.
Oh, yeah.
Well, it's cringy because it wasn't on HBO, because like they tried to push, but you can only push so far on network television. It's like, why would you try to push this hard on a network where you can't really do it?
I don't know. It's silly. But so, yeah, so Tucker's getting his stress relieving sleep rubs from T'Pol, and then it's got to be like, it's pretty late, I'm assuming. And then Captain Archer calls T'Pol to his room just to show that he's discovered information about their coordinates from the Zindis, that he figured all this out. And I was like, why are you telling her this now? It's like,
I know. Like,
look what I did. Hey,
my theory is Scott Bakula was mad that he doesn't get the romance with T'Pol, and he's just he's breaking it up as much as he can. It's meta.
Yeah, he's like, he's got dibs. He's watching what she's doing all the time.
He's stalking her with all the ship sensors, without a doubt. Like, oh, you're touching T'Pol's naked feet? Oh, put your clothes on, woman. Come see me.
Yeah, maybe it's sort of a somewhat a Shatner-esque kind of thing to do. So they find out this planet that they might have stopped at, and they're going to go chase after it and see if they can find more information about the Zindi, because the whole hunt is the hunt for the Zindi.
Don't do it. It's going to be another threshold.
Yeah, right. So
what could be worse than giant salamanders? Oh, hold my beer.
Yeah, I know. Well, I don't know. Threshold's pretty bad. So the Enterprise gets to this planet. They find that there's they don't see any life signs, but there's a metallic signature on the planet. So they decide they're going to
beam it up. You've got a transporter, for the love of God. You don't use it yourself. Just beam the metal thing to you.
They don't use the transporter that much in this. So
I know they don't like to use it on themselves, but this is a piece of metal. Just beam it up. Come on.
Actually, tell you the truth, it's probably good that they didn't beam it up.
Wouldn't the guy from
Dark Matter would just incinerate the entire ship.
Yeah, maybe. So they bring down the away team. It's with Archer, Malcolm Reed, and Hoshi, and T'Pol, of course. So, and they land down, and they find the Zindi ship, and they find all these burnt up corpses, crispy critters, and they decide they're
going to have a barbecue.
Somebody's cooking things up here. So. When they're looking through everything, and this is when all of a sudden something starts taking hold of them biologically. The virus that's on this planet infects all the humans. And T'Pol somewhat changes. She has like some bulges on her temples, but nothing too crazy. But Reed totally transforms immediately. And
in hilarious fashion, it should be pointed out.
Oh, I know. Yeah,
he's like a vampire. That she turns, T'Pol turns around. He's like,
I know.
This face makeup, this prosthetic that they decided to go with it. It reminds me of something, and I can't put my finger on what it is. Do you guys? Does it remind you of any other creature?
I don't know if it reminds me of a specific creature.
Wait a minute. Are you talking about the fact that they have those sort of pulsing frog-like discs on the side of their face?
That too, but like even the way that their brows are shaped, and they like their eye sockets where they, you know, the nose is so wide. It just reminds me. I just keep picturing something. Maybe it's like a
Avatar.
A vampire. No, it's not Avatar. Maybe it's like a vampire or something.
Could you be referring to Louis Gossett Jr. in Enemy Mine?
I don't think I've seen that.
So wow. That's a
but
that's
maybe a
deep, that's cut. A deep cut. I bring the deep cuts.
I bring the deep cuts. I don't know. This doesn't sound familiar to me, but I feel like I've seen this type of
maybe some
makeup before.
What about some reason I'm just thinking Underworld, those series. There's maybe some form of vampire. I don't know.
I mean, maybe one of the older vampires had this weird thing, but I don't think that's it either.
It did seem like a kind of generic makeup.
To one of 1,000 different aliens or monsters seen over across decades in Hollywood movies.
Potentially, I guess.
Was it half white, half black?
We should use the Google reverse image lookup and see what other images it could find that look like it, because it's a super generic sci-fi makeup for whatever alien race they're supposed to be.
How about it? Now, here's what would make this show an instant classic, this episode. What if they turned into the aliens from Voyager? I can't remember what episode, but it was an alien merchant that showed up on Voyager for about 15 minutes, and he had this thing where he would sort of puff up his nose sacks. Do you remember that particular episode?
Oh, roughly.
Like when he would just sort of pinch his mouth together and his nose would puff up like almost like an elephant seal. I would have loved it if they turned into that creature.
Well, speaking of Voyager aliens, I think it would have been great if they would have turned into the potato people from Dr. Spy. Because we had so many jokes about the potato people and sour cream and some bacon and cheese.
Some chives on them.
Yeah. They looked like baked potatoes. Weren't their costumes like silver? Like
yeah, they looked like they're wrapped in aluminum foil.
They were like baked potatoes, stick it in a microwave and make it spark.
Yeah, for sure. That's a good one, too, if you ever want to find that episode.
Our planet is very different. We're only allowed to be served with an entree.
We're not a la carte anymore.
World, you get to be the entree.
You sound kind of like the guy from that episode.
He's a classic.
Yeah, he is. Potato Man.
Yeah, we can't remember his name, but yeah, Mr. Potato Head.
Let's go to Ponderosa, people. All right, so like we said, they are all mutated, and from there, she calls Enterprise and lets them know that they got to send a security team, and that something's happening, that they're speaking a different language. So from there, there's some fisticuffs occur, and T'Pol kind of like gets beaten up a little bit, and she runs away, and they start chasing her through the forest. So she gets knocked out at some point because she gets hit with some branches or something. I can't quite remember, but she gets knocked out, and when they wake up, she's all tied up. Pretty elaborate.
Bouch, go wow, wow.
And
they have a distinctive understanding of how to create these elaborate ways of tying people up and trussing them.
Yeah, it's instinctive for their race.
They were built in with the innate thing they could look for their home. They're also also had innately known S&M ties. You know, it was also just cooked into the DNA.
I felt like it seemed kind of brilliant to have a netting underneath her as well, because I just feel like that helps spread the weight better.
Yeah.
So, I don't know.
She says, like, just make her comfortable.
Don't be dirty.
I can't not be dirty.
They were the best hammock builders in the universe. Her extinction would be a real loss to us.
Welcome to the Hammock Emporium.
So the universal translator seems to kick in at some point where they're talk enough that she can understand what they're saying, and so they can have a conversation. On Enterprise, Dr. Phlox is looking at these new biosignals, and Tucker's like, what's going on? Like, where did the rest of the away team go? We only see T'Pol down there. This is when T'Pol basically says that told them that they've been altered, and that he means that they're trying to figure out really what happened down on the surface. And they Tucker decided he's going to go down with a shuttle pod with environmental suits to see what's happening. So
middle-aged mutant ninja crewman. Web feet, duck powered.
What's that, Jason?
We got to pay some respect to the terrible language they came up with for the. That was like, the makeup itself was off to a bad start, but when they start their sort of hissing Greedo talk, that's when I was like, know. Oh God.
Like, do you think all the actors sat together and like, how can we make these guys look really weird and like act real alien, you know?
Well, the answer was act like Mum and Chans.
Take a lot of LSD.
First time I've seen this. I don't think this is the first time I've seen this kind of behavior in an alien species. So it didn't really throw me off.
Yeah, that's true. The first time we see Ferengi on Next Gen, they act very much the same way.
That's exactly right. That they act just like these actors did, just like the Ferengis.
It's like look at Armin Shimerman the first time he put on the Klingon makeup. Do that.
just pretend you got palsy.
Yeah, that's right.
Look for gold and pull out your whips.
But pretend that you've never used your elbows before.
They did have them stand.
Hey, people do put their genitals in different places, as Star Trek VI taught us.
Yes.
Who knows? Could be on their butt.
Or their elbows.
Or
maybe that elbows. Elbow that they don't bend.
Just elbows and asses. So T'Pol is trying to convince them that they got to go back to Enterprise. Unfortunately, they're only interested in going to this city called Urquhart. And yeah,
great name. Another hit.
Yeah, I know. It's going to be a great.
We can get to Urquhart faster if we go to Enterprise. T'Pol should have led with.
I know, right? Oh. She should have, totally. They would have gone for it, too. They're drawn to this place, like a salmon spawning area or something like that. They have to go back to this place. So we also see that they go up this tree and they get this food that's, they're fighting over these, like, eggs or something.
Maggots.
They have, like, maggots in it.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
Maggot nest or something.
Maybe they're turning into the creatures from Conspiracy. They liked maggots, too.
Maybe it is Conspiracy.
Oh, yeah.
So
this is that moment. Once Archer, not to spoil anything, but once Archer is transformed back into a human and he remembers that the defining characteristic of this species is eating maggot fruit, I don't think he should have been too eager to ensure that they can potentially be revived sometime. He should have been like, it's time to let this species go. I think we know why they didn't survive. You know,
right?
They're living flies. I know, right?
They don't even look as good as Jeff Goldblum's The Fly. Come on.
That would have been cool, actually.
This whole episode is a series of callbacks to other things that are much better than this episode. Yeah, I know, right?
The entire series is a callback to a bunch of things that were much better.
Maybe, but this is maybe the lowest point. I don't know. There's a couple low points. But this goes down pretty far. Tucker takes a team down, a couple of the Makos down with them, and as they head down, they start trying to find a place to land, and they're trying to track the first away team with T'Pol. So. During this time, they do run into the way team, and there's this big fight between like Reed and the Makos, and I think they kill the one Mako, don't they? They like burst open his helmet or something. I can't quite remember, but it looked like they killed the one guy. So, am I correct in remembering that?
I think I've blocked out a lot of this episode again. I don't remember that at all.
I have no idea. I just don't understand why.
I remember Roger Cross coming. It's a virus,
and it like changes your genetic makeup. Yeah. Where were the ones that killed the team that they were there to rescue?
Well, they get to Reed and they take him back to the ship because the other ones they can't find them.
Yeah, Reed they knock Reed out, and Archer and Hoshi and run off, and T'Pol goes with them.
Yeah,
so. She says, I'm going to stay with
Someone's
them.
Someone's got to babysit the Neanderthals.
I just feel like there should be other beings that were infected at this point in time. Do you know what I'm saying?
It seems like that other... Well, we'll get into it. But
the other race comes and just burns them out.
I guess.
Yes. They host a barbecue every single time someone lands on the planet.
We're having a barbecue, guys.
Yeah, that makes sense. That they came to find when they found their ship? Is that the question?
What's that?
Yeah.
They went to investigate a Zindi ship, what they thought was a Zindi ship, and they didn't find any Zindi. The Zindi must have been turned into these things, too, and that's the ones that got toasted by the aliens we'll see later.
Right.
So back on Enterprise, Dr. Phlox realizes that the reason T'Pol hasn't been changed is so she has these K cells that are neutralizing the virus.
And special K cells.
Special
K. So her DNA, active DNA. Like, why doesn't he have that on file?
Cause episode.
Yeah, I know.
Do they normally keep everyone's DNA on file?
If you were running the Enterprise and all the crazy shit you run into, wouldn't you just want to have just
DNA stuff? Of every?
She's the only Vulcan on board. She should have donated her blood to be put in a sack so they could give her blood if she ever was in a situation where she lost a lot of blood.
But they have a replicator. Can't they just make it?
Replicators are hit and miss in Enterprise too.
I'm pretty sure they take a DNA sample from you every day before breakfast in this future.
Well, good thing Trip force fed T'Pol half a peach.
Weird.
So
how else would we find DNA, the only Vulcan DNA on that ship? How else could we find even a particle of T'Pol's DNA?
She touched my feet a lot. Maybe you could scrape my feet and try DNA from that.
So many missed opportunities on this episode.
Soiled panties.
Here you are making panty and feet jokes, and I'm thinking, why would she put a peach back in a box after she took a bite?
That's a good question, too.
They just put it back because she had to massage him real quick. Because Vulcans, also, her touching the peach with her hands violates Vulcan food traditions. Vulcans aren't supposed to touch food with their hands. Oh. When she, like, uses a fork and knife to eat a crusted breadstick.
Crusted breadstick.
The most intelligent species on the planet doesn't realize that you don't cut a breadstick with a fork.
It is a stick. Use your hands.
Does she have any Vulcan?
You think she would have chopsticks?
Does she have Vulcan period tampons laying around somewhere?
Oh, damn.
I mean, there's got to be some way to get some DNA.
Okay, just go through her toilet waste. The two alien ships show up, and they are basically declare Enterprise under quarantine. So there we are, quarantine, just like us.
It's Mr. Roger Cross, like from Dark Matter. It's the only thing I know him from, although I was scrolling through his IMDb, he's been in some video games I've played.
Nice. So they want to board Enterprise. Tucker, who's in command of Enterprise, he refuses. And he says, you can come over and we can talk about it, but we're not going to just let you just come onto our ship and just take over. So
come on, we'll have a cookout. Come on.
So they have their race has basically been studying this virus for 60 years, and their only option they found is just burn it with fire. And their plan basically do the same thing with Enterprise's crew, just eradicate anybody who has the virus or has been exposed to the virus. So that's Tucker invites them to come and check out what's going on the ship. So on the planet, Archer is...
Does he invite them, or does he just, like, is this a negotiation to keep them at bay? I think it's more the latter.
Yeah, I mean, I think it is. Maybe a little overture, see if things can work out between each other, you know, see how reasonable they are. Mm-hmm. On the planet, Archer has this dream about Urquhart, an underground city, and it's this big, you know, bustling metropolis. And just before he wakes up, he sees himself as a human, Archer, walk through a doorway, and then he's kind of wakes up at that. So it's like maybe Archer's subconscious pushing through or something.
Well, you know what happened in my brain when I saw this? Of course you don't, because you weren't there. But
I wasn't there in your brain, but...
I was thinking, I wonder if they get to the city, if this weird little parasite organism thing, virus, is going to leave him and release Archer. That's where my brain went.
Oh.
Yeah. Because I was like, it was like a foreshadowing, like a dream, like, oh, if I get to the city, I will release the host.
That would have been a much better ending.
We could have watched Archer erupting from his own back like a cicada from its chrysalis.
Or ew.
That would be awesome. And I'd pay money for that.
Yeah. If you've got a week, you know what, if you're LeVar Burton, you're directing this and you know, you've got a weak ass episode, you need someone like Holly to say, well, you know what we really need is, you know, to really jazz up and give the fans something. Cause this is crap. Give us Archer tearing his own skin off and then the skin runs away.
Oh, that would be hilarious. Just see like a bag of skin running off. In the
oh
distance.
My God. That would be so funny. You're killing me. You're killing me. Okay, seriously.
So
creepy. So, creepy as hell.
It is. It is hilarious. Creepy. For sure.
Now you see why we burn these things. Dear God, look at this. Oh,
well, they already kind of look like melted and droopy.
That's right. So from there, we get he wakes up. And he tells Sato about the city that he saw, and they're both like, can't wait to get there. But T'Pol's still trying to get him, say, hey, you still got to go to Enterprise. You're from Earth. But they think that she's like trying to like lie to them.
You're trying to steal my man.
Exactly. from there, the alien race that tries to quarantine Enterprise, his name's Tret. And he comes aboard Enterprise and he's on sick bay and he's talking to Phlox and Tucker about the virus. And basically telling them that these are an ancient race. They're called the Locure. I think that's what they say. It's a very strange written name. And the race is...
just like everything else, highly forgettable.
They could no longer propagate, so they couldn't have children. So what they decided to do is they figured out a virus that would infect the victims and make them change into them as a race, and they would want to repopulate their civilization. So I guess this is something that Tret and his people have been fighting this outbreak for a very, very long time. And the only way they, like I said, that they've been changed, trying to keep this up from spreading was from burning it with fire. And T'Pol basically says, you know, through the DNA, through T'Pol's DNA, they could probably get this fixed, but they need about 2 hours. And this is when Tucker decides that he remembers that that T'Pol bit into one of the peaches.
Ate a peach.
and runs to T'Pol's room and grabs it and to give it back to Phlox to try to replicate that T cell.
It's the nastiest peach.
Yeah, all he does, all he ends up doing is creating a better, tastier peach.
That's right.
It's necessary, okay? There's an enzyme in the peach. It really assisted with this vaccine.
Yeah. It'd be great if they all start growing peaches under their arms, like they're half peach trees.
They just got a little bit of fuzz everywhere.
Yeah, I know.
So one thing this episode doesn't do, okay, it tells you that, so here's this race, it lost ability to breed or whatever, and so they created a DNA thing to keep themselves going. But then what happened? Why did their society still fall to pieces?
I felt that this... the race where the guy in the cool leather suit.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I felt that it was something like Insidious going on. Like they were there. It was like genocide and they were trying to cover it up and keep them dead. Mm. That was my theory.
Yeah. They were certainly a pitiless race. They didn't even stun you before they burned you to death.
Right. They killed their own, I guess, comrade. Yeah. That's the way to put it. But,
that's the race that I don't want to see go on forever.
Yeah. So that's what I thought. I was like, that must be how their society fell. They must have been hunted because, you know, of, I guess, I don't know. I don't know why, because.
I think that makes perfect sense.
They probably dropped a weapon of mass destruction on their city because their city's all messed up. And then they purposely, hit it with rocks and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
They nuked it from orbit. Like the episode.
Maybe Maybe the mattress consortium shut down the hammock consortium and they put them out of business for good.
The Ferengi really didn't like their quality because they charged too much for it. And they're going to buy a lot more lower-priced hammocks and sell them for higher prices.
So back to the hammock district, Urquhart. So they get to the city, and Archer and Sato and T'Pol, and they see it's completely destroyed. There's nothing there. And they're pretty devastated by all this. And unfortunately, this is when the race that is trying to keep the quarantine under place, they beam down, or they come down, and they decide they're going to start to burn them all up with fire. So there's some fighting back and forth, chasing, and one of these aliens get their helmets broken open, and their comrades don't take a moment, but to torch them. They don't even say goodbye to their friend. So just burn them with fire. And
why do they even need? This is this is a very poorly written episode. If the aliens are on the planet, they're the ones that the Loquar or whatever they're called, the ones that you know are transformed, and all they want to do is get to the city and not leave. Isn't your problem already solved? Why do they have to go down there and burn them? Burning them doesn't end anything. The virus is still around, but they're not going to go anywhere, so they're not a threat to anyone else either.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, yeah, it's like, is there any technology that can fly off the planet?
Maybe.
Oh,
this is what happens when you don't when you go with the rough draft.
just during this whole fight, they're being chased, and this is when Tucker and the Mako show up. They beam down and they shoot the aliens with their stun, and they stun them all. And then this is when T'Pol basically says, tells Archer, you got to come and go to the shuttle pod.
Come with me if you want to live.
Yeah. And so they get to the ship. And this is where Tucker tells Travis Mayweather, who's in command of the Enterprise at the moment, to get out of orbit. And they go to warp. The aliens chase them down. And during this chase, Phlox has come up with some concoction with T'Pol's T cells to counteract their
K cells.
K-cells. Oh, I'm sorry, what did I say? T-cells?
T-cells. Special K-cells.
The A-cells. This is the Battlestar Galactica podcast, my friend.
Sorry. So they chase him. They're chasing him down, and at some point, Archer comes to a point where he's back to somewhat normal, and he calls over to the ship, like, why are you chasing our ship and shooting at us? And I guess they just decide, yeah, okay, you've come up with a cure. It took us 60 years to figure this out.
I don't fucking believe it.
We did it in 60 seconds.
Well, you just put your finger on what the undercurrent of the story was. It was, yes, they committed genocide, you know, against this race, and the flamethrower industry does not want a cure.
This is the Boring Company doesn't want a cure. The Boring Company is making flamethrowers for these aliens.
Yeah.
So Hoshi and Malcolm and Archer are slowly getting back to normal. We get a little scene where Reed comes in and he's still not feeling right and talks to Phlox about it. And there's a little joke like, why don't you go eat some of
my bats, termites.
Yeah, exactly.
Termite larva or something.
And at the last scene, Phlox offers, like, should I destroy the virus? It's the last sample I have here of everything.
Absolutely.
And Archer goes, this is the last, like, basically will and testament of this race. We should keep it on ice. And he puts it in a small box that anybody could open up by accident. So
I know, right?
That should be under lock and key,
Oh, my gosh. It should be in an incinerator.
It bothered me so much.
They don't even let the common cold out of the CDC.
I know. So
it's in a room in a vat the size of a refrigerator with armed guards.
So that's the end of this episode. Jason, you're our guest. What did you feel about Extinction, the episode?
Well, first of all, I think the greatest missed opportunity was that instead of ending on that scene of preserving the DNA, we should cut back to Trip and to Paul, and instead of feeding her a peach, he's feeding her one of those maggot fruits.
But it would be Hoshi, because T'Pol never got a taste for maggot fruit, I don't think.
Yeah. Well, she would say something like, "I think I'm learning your ways," or, you know, something like that. We must all embrace new cultures and, you know, not eat breadsticks with forks and knives.
It's okay hilarious. If it touches someone else's fingers, as long as it doesn't touch my fingers.
Yeah. So to answer your question, well, first of all, I should point out that Enterprise is my least favorite of the Star Trek series, and I could barely name a single one that I thought was strong at all, which is ironic for me to critique it, because on my YouTube channel, I've got a clip from Enterprise, which is probably the one thing that has gotten, like, you know, over 100,000 views. You know, I get comments on
it. Really?
So I should not diss Enterprise, because it's the only thing that brings anyone to my YouTube channel. So,
I know,
yeah,
I need to see this now.
This episode was embarrassing. For all the reasons we just went through, the makeup is the least of its sins, but just the terrible way they had to portray these aliens, that horrible language, and nothing about it wasn't cringy, you know.
Right,
and then,
right.
And ultimately, you know, it suffers from a lot of the things that you know, your worst Star Trek episodes suffer from, is, you know, the very. It makes no sense for these aliens to be, to be going down to the surface and torching these creatures one by one when they have no means to escape their planet.
We have to have a moral dilemma.
Right. So it was, that when I said it at the beginning, when I realized what episode I was being forced to watch, it was like getting an enema.
You're really...
Thanks, guys.
and the only... My favorite episode, which is just as bad, but which I wish it was the one we had watched, was the one, I don't know which one it was, but it was Archer has been, and maybe someone else, but Archer is cocooned by these sort of white slimy tentacles in the shuttle bay or something.
It looks like semen's everywhere. It's pretty
great. That was horrible, but that was like at least had laugh potential, you know, for how obviously disgusting in this episode.
We got some good laughs out of this one.
Yeah, I mean there's always cringy version of Star Trek. I mean, it happens. I don't know. Just there's some bad scripts, obviously. I don't know, Holly. What did you think about this episode? You seem like you liked it a little bit better than everyone else.
The rest of you. I don't know. I guess I think, you know, I didn't see anything visually that really upset me. I thought, you know, I like creature makeup, so that was fun. Granted, it was weird. I thought it was neat. I'd love to see a behind the scenes on like. How they continue to keep the little puffers going. That'd been fun.
The little what?
The little puffers under their cheekbones. Or outside their cheekbones.
Yes, uh-huh.
Yeah, that'd been fun to see how they... I mean, I'm sure it was just like a little squeeze ball or something, like under their armpit or something. but that would have been cool. I really liked it as like the theatrical part, you know? I think it was... For a casual viewing, I think it was a fine episode. It didn't have anything that actually pissed me off, aside from the fact that I was just like, oh, they kind of made me think it was going this way, and it definitely did not. I thought it would have been fun to be a participant in this episode, as the actors, basically from the actor's point of view, I think they, going from their serious roles to this weird, snarling, breathing... ticking thing, you know. I know that I'm curious to see if the actors enjoyed doing this episode, because it was silly. So as an actor, I think fun, like I feel like it'd be kind of fun to do when you're stuck in there. You're season three and you're used to this character, and you get a chance to kind of break away and do something silly and weird and alien, and I just think I kind of liked it for that. Did you want to say something about that, Aaron?
No, I just, sometimes I wonder if, like, actors, like, get together and it's, like, sort of, how should I put it? you know, they're trying to do like, they workshop it together and they're coming up with ideas like, oh, that'd be a good idea. Let's do that. Oh, let's do this. And
right. Let's twitch our bring our shoulder up every once in a while.
And what if LeVar Burton just told them what to do the entire time?
Maybe. They all seemed pretty into it. None of the actors seemed to hold back from their weird little alien thing. So like it felt like a complete performance. It didn't feel like it felt like everybody was on board. If that makes sense.
Well, they definitely put their effort into the performance. That's for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I thought it was pretty good. I mean, there were moments where I didn't care for T'Pol's like trying to communicate with them. I felt like when she's trying to get them to talk, she says like just speak like 6 times. And I assume, I don't know how the translator worked, but I assume she kind of had to get them to make as many clicks as possible until the recorder could kind of like understand and try to form a language to make sense. That's what I assumed.
When they cut away
from it. They didn't want to say anything as soon as T'Pol wanted them to talk.
Exactly. But the only other thing I really wanted to say, you know how I mentioned earlier that I was able to kind of appreciate the intro, the visual intro. I wanted to add that, you know, this was, I don't know why, and I wrote down, I think it's probably because I was recently in a naval warship, but I was actually able to appreciate the ship's set inside and how it looked like a naval warship, and that always bothered me before. And for some reason,
you before that it looked like one, or
that
what?
It looked that it was so metal and it was so sterile. It was such a sterile environment and so cold. But now that I've been in a warship, I don't know. I guess that's probably why I enjoyed it. But I was like, I kind of like this ship now. I don't.
That's funny that you say that, because when they first talked and announced Enterprise, it was supposed to be like, obviously before the Federation was a Federation, it was humankind just going out for the first time with their first warp ship and everything. And I got the impression that this thing was going to be more like a submarine, like not in shape of submarine, but like tight quarters. And when I saw it, I was like, they sort of were going for it, but it's still a little more robust. You know, like bigger rooms and stuff like that, but it still looks. Yeah, they kept it room, but they probably did that mostly for production reasons
and to get the camera in there and stuff.
I mean, although I would say, especially if you're thinking about like continuity and progress in the world, you know, you want space. you want that extra room, because it's bananas how much little space those guys get, and so I think it's brilliant that they made it spacious and large, because if they did make it too condensed, we would be going, this is the future. Why are we still doing this?
Yeah.
Right.
Well, speaking of that, this was the first I've seen, you know, all of Enterprise, but this is the first time it really struck me. I appreciate that Star Trek, you know, starting from Next Generation on, has had a kind of a minimalist approach to the CGI graphics on the screens that the actors interact with. But this one it really caught me off guard. They're looking at a screen. They're looking at some, you know, glyphs and graphics of, you know, spaceships or planets, and it's like this is like lame even by like 1980s standards almost. It's like this is the future. Why are they making the graphics look this choppy? You know?
Yeah.
It's funny. Yeah. I don't know. I enjoyed that they did that with Enterprise, like the visualization of it. But I always thought it would have been like, because I always like, people always say like when they're designing, especially like, I'm just going to go back to the submarine analogy, is that there's no space that's not used in a submarine. It's like everything has a purpose. There's no reason, no space is not like unused. So. Right.
You don't get to bring your plants along.
Yeah, exactly. Not like Picard did. So, I mean, but I get what you're saying. And somebody, I saw somebody tweeted something about Star Trek saying that being quarantined is like being on a ship like the Enterprise. Is like you're stuck inside your ship for, you know, for a long time, and every once in a while you get to do an away team and go someplace. So I thought that was pretty funny.
I mean, that's
so,
kind of funny, yeah.
Yeah. It's so,
although those people have probably never been on a an actual warship and not been able to leave the boat.
I know. Could you imagine not getting be part of the away team? You get to a planet, it's like, nope, you don't get to leave. You stay here.
I mean, I can't personally, but I've heard stories.
Yeah, people get pretty pissed off.
People getting grounded to the boat.
Oh, I know.
Dumb.
Well, I mean, Holly, my grandfather was in the Navy, and he used to get in a lot of fights, and so he was always in the brig. So.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I think I'm going to like.
Yeah. Dave, what did you think of this episode?
Oh, Scott Bakula and his moral ambiguity. Oh, he condemns the species to die because there's two on the one planet, and he makes Phlox make a cure for him, and then they're like, Phlox is like, nah, let him die. Let him die. The other one, they'll raise up and it'll be fine. And now it's like, okay, we got a dead race. Only way to make more is the virus. Let's keep that alive.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, you're talking about... Why didn't they just incinerate
the planet? If they knew about this, why didn't they just kill the whole planet?
Yeah, why would you burn the whole planet? Just nuke it.
Just nuke it.
That's what I'm saying.
It looked like they sort of nuked the city because the city was all messed up, but they should have just burned the entire planet.
Right, lots if there things, were zero inhabitants.
Lots of things coulda, woulda, shoulda. I mean, I don't know, but it just makes me so mad that, like, Captain Archer's like, yes, let's doom a race that's alive. They can still breed. We've got a cure for them, but no, we're not going to give it to them because we're a bunch of giant assholes.
You're referring to the episode Dear Doctor.
Yes.
That's season one.
Yeah, it's like, I'm just like, you asshole. And you're going to keep this virus alive. I'm like, no. You condemned a race to die when you had a cure, but you're going to keep this evil virus.
And this is before the Prime Directive.
Yeah, I know. It's all before the Prime Directive. And the Dear Doctor episode was about, like, the origins of the Prime Directive because, you know, Archer was talking about, oh, we got to have some kind of directive or something so that we can make these decisions easier by just following a set of rules or whatever. And now it's just like, nah, we'll just keep this virus alive. Yeah. No, it's just kind of awful.
It doesn't turn Archer into a maggot-eating monkey.
Yeah. It's I don't know. It just like the episode was bad, but then they did that. I'm just like, you not remember what happened in season one? I don't know. It just made me mad that he's like, kill a race. Oh, let's not commit genocide today, even though the race is already dead. I don't know. It was just it just kind of made me mad. And this episode it's totally forgettable. I know I've seen this episode before because I've watched Enterprise all the way through two or three times. And I swear, before we started this season three, we're all going to work our way through it eventually. Like, I swear that I don't remember season three being this bad. And I'm just like, wow, I must have blocked it from my mind. Because, like, this episode was, like, vaguely familiar, but I barely remembered anything from it. I was like, what is this?
It's almost like you watched it for the first time.
Almost. And I was so disappointed.
You know what I'd always this is a great chance for me to recite one of my favorite unexplored possibilities from Enterprise. I kind of hope that at the end of the Zindi saga that what the payoff would be instead of Earth going to war with the Zindi, that the founding of the Federation would be based on some sort of maybe philosophical tract that the Zindi themselves had come up with to keep all their diverse species cooperating, even though they're very different from each other. I thought that could have been a nifty reward for Earth, obeying its better angels and not destroying the Zindi just the way the Zindi wanted to destroy us, and instead they learn from the Zindi how the Federation itself can evolve through cooperation.
That would have been brilliant. That would have been absolutely brilliant if that was like the culmination of the arc. But no, we get Nazis in space again.
Yeah.
Because we haven't done it in every other Star Trek series. It's kind of brilliant, and you know they could have done some really good stuff with this season. Speaking of that,
well, season three was never my favorite. Zindi arc I hated how Archer acts through the whole thing. He's like a man obsessed with his mission, and he really starts getting like he loses the hopeful explorer aspect of his character that just totally disappears to just let's be like get stop the Zindi and you know get revenge for what happened. This episode, as I said, if you listen back to our episode 239 Anomaly, I lamented what was coming up. It was this episode, and at least this episode we can talk to Jason and talk about his comic and make my life a little more joyful, because I was not looking forward to this episode whatsoever.
This episode's been kind of fun though.
Talk about it. Like, especially with our pandemic, it was a good time to talk about it.
No, you're right about that, Holly. And Holly, I think your idea of, like, I mean, maybe not the skin taking off, like, maybe not that idea, but that would have been a cool ending. Like, all of a sudden, like, they could reconstruct the race, you know, or something like that. Or
I mean, I assumed it would be more ethereal. Like, I assumed that it was like a vapor that they inhaled, so it wasn't necessarily like a virus or a sickness. I just assumed that they would like leave the body and the bodies would return to normal and they would regain their humanity.
What if you infused this virus into like tribbles and then they could reproduce?
Oh my God.
I mean, that would be like, that would solve their problem right there.
Well, according to the triple with Edward, that hasn't happened yet. The triples don't reproduce like mad yet because Edward hasn't fucked with them.
He's the one who did that.
Did it.
What we're going to find out is that, and based on that, the trouble with Edward episode, based on Prometheus and Covenant, we're going to find out that all things that appear alien and interesting were actually created by human beings at one point or another.
My problem with trouble with Edward is if a Starfleet officer genetically modified these things, how is this not in the records? How does Bones not know about it? How is like he's trying to study them like it's never been done before? It's just
I mean,
so many problems with that episode.
Think about it. The humans are not infallible. And would the human race want to admit that they are going off and exploring and fucking up the world or the galaxy? No. The universe? No. They're not going to want to admit that they did that. So if it was knowledge, if it was known that we were responsible, they're going to be play like,
The point of keeping, what's the point of everyone having a personal and public log if they just throw it all in the shredder?
Keep face, because they're stupid.
Keep face.
This is absolutely atrocious.
No, you know we're gonna, you know we'll find out someday. They'll do a Star Trek series where there's basically a galactic Nuremberg trial, and the logs are basically used to get all of humanity to record that they created the Borg, the Tribbles, and they are responsible for every disaster that has befallen the galaxy. Oh,
that's gonna be great.
That what Q see. Try to do?
Maybe that's what we'll see in Discovery 3.
That's what Q is leading up to. It's like someday your whole species is gonna be on trial in this way.
Time to go out in space and fuck something
up. They were, yeah.
Yes, this is what needs to happen.
Headcanon.
I'm very happy that we could break it up and talk about something that's a little more, I guess, exciting.
And I'm so glad that you picked this episode, because I had a really shitty day, and this one, I don't know, this episode wasn't, it made me laugh, so.
Well, thanks. I'm glad this made you laugh, because I was like, I gotta watch it again for the show.
No, David was like, oh, I'm so embarrassed. And I'm like, oh, great. I get to end my day with this. And I was like, oh, it wasn't that bad. So.
Oh, no.
I've been looking for some yucks.
Oh, yeah, this is great for yucks. I mean, like our Deep Space Nine episode we did last time, we were so excited about that it wasn't very funny.
No, and this one,
sometimes the worst episodes are kind of the funnest to talk about because they're just so out there.
Yeah.
Well, you know, the worst ones, you kind of have to find reasons to appreciate or hate it. So, I mean,
that's for sure. We should talk about the empath from TOS. It's my most hated TOS.
Maybe soon. I think the reason I like season 3 is I really like the temporal Cold War stuff. And the temporal Cold War stuff always got my imagination going. And that was my biggest regret, that Enterprise never got to wrap up the temporal Cold War. Because I liked the guy from the future always messing with things and take an archer to the far future, then they get stuck there. And it was all this crazy stuff that happened. It was really interesting. That's the stuff that I guess all the good stuff is the only things I remember from season 3, and I forgot and blocked out all the bad.
Yeah. That's what happens when you get older.
It's been a long time, yeah, losing all my brain cells.
Well, anyways, it was great to talk about this with you guys, making a laugh out of it, because I'd just be gnawing my arm off. So, Jason, let everyone know again where they can find you and any other information that you want to impart on people.
Sure. Well, unless a race of aliens with flamethrowers comes to eradicate me from infecting other people with my comic books, you can find my work at whatisdeepfried.com or weaponbrown.com if you want to explore my most popular project. And I am Death Ray on Twitter and Death_Ray_graphics on Insta.
Nice. Very cool. Very cool. I definitely would suggest that you check out his work. Like I said, I've been a fan of Jason's work for a while, and he does not disappoint. So he has some very, very cool work.
Kobayashi Maru is a beautiful comic. I loved the Pink Lady.
Oh, thank you. Yeah,
I knew
you'd love. She's my take on the Talosians, by the way. If that didn't come through,
I thought she was going to be a. I thought she was kind of a Delton.
Well, you know what? As with everything in that comic, several things can be melded into one.
So she's a Delton Talosian, because I was getting just by what she was saying and how she could change her breast size. I'm like, oh, she's got to be like a Delton. That's amazing.
I like hearing other people's interpretations of you know what I'm going for.
I like how she just banged on her brain and she's like, don't worry about it.
Don't worry.
That was probably my favorite thing to draw, because in my mind, the actual exchange between her and the person who's watching her, smash her fist into her own brain, and he just says, "Jesus Christ, please stop doing that."
It's great.
In my head, it's like, that's a brilliant line.
And then I love how the Klingon seals the guy's butt up. He's just got a round rump. No crack. That was amazing.
Thank you. Yes. Lots of good stuff for anyone willing to shell out a few bucks.
Yeah, great.
If you're looking for, it's definitely, there's a lot of humor involved, so you're getting a laugh with it too. So that's a great thing about
it. Yeah, it's a lot of fun. I can't wait for more issues.
Well, thank you. Yeah, I look forward to making more. Hopefully, I can get you to cover it when I do.
Sweet. Sounds good.
You can count on us for that. Yay. For sure.
Inappropriate humor is happy here.
Yes, very much so. It happens all the time.
Rampant.
Yes. Well, everyone, for us, you can find us at synthaholics.com. You can email us if you have different ideas or thoughts at synthaholics@yahoo.com. You can tweet at us at Synthaholic Duo. You can find us on Instagram at synthaholics.podcast. And if the show is something you want to support, please go to our Patreon, patreon.com/synthaholics. That's a great way to support the show. You can also join us with our Facebook group, or facebook.com/groups/synthaholics. And you can join in the chatter about Picard and whatever else we decide we're going to talk about for the week. And as always, a great way to support the show is to share the show on social media, or just tell your friends about the podcast you're listening to. I know a lot of people are in quarantine. They're looking for new things to listen to and do because they are bored. So
you have to and be maybe, bored to listen to us, right?
Yeah, I know. That's right. It's never boring.
Don't turn into a fish monkey on your own. Listen to this podcast while you look for Urquhart.
That's right. Urquhart. What happened to our city? So, everyone, we hope that you stay healthy and safe. And as Holly keeps on saying, wash your hands.
Please.
And your deck. Please.
And if the beach is closed, don't go to the fucking beach.
That's right.
Testify.
Yeah. Yeah.
Sorry, that's the bitch part of me today.
Well, everyone.
Don't go to the beach. Don't snorkel. Go to the beach.
leave that to the snorks. All right, guys. Live long and prosper, one and all. The side of Mars. Will McCoy, my boy, come mix me a drink. Before the night's over, I'll puke in the sink. And we'll cry till we laugh. And we'll both shit our pants. You're the best drinking friend I ever had. Awesome.
Thank you, Jason, so for joining us.
Jason. It was great to have you. Thank you very much.
This was a lot of fun.
Even though it was a bad episode? Sorry.
Yeah.
The bad ones are the most fun to go Mystery Science Theater on. So.
Yeah, for sure.
I thought it was fun to talk about. So.
Yeah, no, it definitely was. Yeah. Let us know if you want to, like, if next time you come. I don't know how often you do your books. How regularly you can get them out, but let us know when you get the next one out, and we'll try to make an arrangement to get hopefully it'll be a better show, that we can watch.
Well, maybe we can let him pick the episode.
Yeah, I know. Maybe
that. Maybe as long as it's not TNG. I think we're gonna put the barrier on TNG for a while because
we burned out
so
TNG.
Much before yeah. Picard, and then Picard. Wasn't exactly what we hoped, I don't think.
Yeah. I definitely would love doing the Enterprise episode where Archer is covered in semen tentacles.
Is that season 3?
Yeah.
Is that season 3? I hope not.
I'll have to find that one out. I don't know which episode that is.
I hope it's season 1 or 2 because we can diverge from the 3 recap, or if it doesn't matter if it's in 4 either. It could be in any of them. Hopefully it's 1 or 2. Cause I feel like, isn't that the episode where they invented force fields or something? I feel like that happened earlier on.
I don't know. Let's see. There's so many different episodes.
Archer, Seaman, Cargo Bay. I wonder if Google can find that for me.
Alexa. Please find this. Please use these search terms, but please don't tell Amazon what I'm looking for.
All right.
Because I don't want their recommends that would arise from this inquiry.
I'll have to look that one up. I don't remember which season or episode that even is. Is there anything else other than that happens in that? Does anybody remember?
I think that's also the episode where it opens with. They have a delegation of aliens who are very mad, and they're storming off the ship, and we don't know what annoyed them, but we find out later it's that they never eat in public, and so when the Enterprise crew was eating a meal in front of them, it was a breach of protocol.
No, that's next gen.
No,
it was Enterprise. Oh yeah,
I do remember that episode. Oh, yeah,
for some reason I thought that was it's next gen. Enterprise. Oh, that was Enterprise. I'm trying to find it.
You eat like you mate is the is
yeah.
The,
it's called Voxola, and it's
Trip's covered in Khan too.
Yeah, season 1, episode 22.
We got to do we'll do that one. That won't break with our Enterprise tradition.
Remember when TV series could have 22 episodes in a season?
I miss that. Sure, you get some stinkers, but you still get some good ones.
Absolutely.
Oh, man. I miss that so much.
Let's see. So, and this episode's not going to come out this Monday, but it'll come out next Monday, right? Because we got to do a release. We did a review.
Battle Angel Alita comes out tomorrow morning. Tonight,
yeah. Yeah, so we're a little ahead of the curve, just in case anything happens.
Okay. You'll send me a link, I hope.
Sure. I'll give you all that information for sure. So
we'll probably tag you in the Twitter post because the Twitter post comes out automatically once it gets posted.
Okay.
Yeah. Absolutely. All right. Well, great talking to you, man. I'm glad you could come on the show.
It was nice to meet you.
Oh, thank you. Thank you very much. I had a great time. I don't do podcasts too often, but I love doing them when I can. And this was a lot of fun. I love talking Star Trek.
Awesome. I genuinely do look forward to what your next stuff come for this Kobayashi Maru.
Oh, absolutely.
Great. Well, I'm glad you enjoyed, and thank you very much for giving me a chance to get the ball rolling on promoting this, because it's my big project for the coming year, is where I'm really going to hopefully start cranking it out on a regular schedule. I got to do a lot of prep work ahead of time. But I'm glad you enjoyed it, and I hope to share more with you.
I Sounds love it. Good. Thank you.
Talk to you soon, Hope.
Awesome.
Okay.
Be right back. Cool.
We're accepting of each other. The all next right. Frozen Funny. Song.
And you are you guys all from like Tonawanda? Is that what I saw?
I met them in that area, but I live in California right now.
We used to invade her home on occasion.
Yeah.
We are now coast to coast, as we found out last week.
Speaking of the California to Tonawanda pipeline, I guess that Celina Owen Barnes is coast to coast as well. So,
oh, wow. Celina Owen Barnes is coast to coast. They have bought that phone number in all the municipalities.
Could be.
Although, what was that one that was 444-4444?
Oh, I don't know.
William Matar.
That was.
Yeah, William that Matar. Was in. That was in, like, North Carolina and South Carolina, as well as New York.
He's like, we're half the price, because we're 444-4444.
4-4.
Oh, my God.
And we're half their price. We're 222-2222.
Right.
The price keeps dropping. I'm going to call the cheapest lawyer who has a billboard and commercial.
I used to work for Ross Celino's brother.
Mm. Oh, really?
Yeah.
Doing what?
Is that the plumber?
They own a T-shirt factory.
So it was like a Roots reenactment.
What? Did you say a Roots reenactment?
Thank you. I didn't get it either, but I laughed.
Like what?
Slave labor, white T-shirt.
Oh, yes, definitely.
That's the gist of the joke, just like slave labor.
All right,
I make lots of Roots things every now and then, like a Discovery season one or two episode. The one we saw The Sense, I guess that was episode two. I said it's like reverse Roots, where Geordi's the one who's got the whip and he's whipping the androids into making them work on the freaking Mars.
Mars colony.
And then.
Oh no, Geordi would be
Kuna Kinte.
The Exocomps.
All right, there you go.
What is your name, Kuna Kinte? No, it's Exocomps.
No, it's F8. It's F8. My name is F8. It's safe mode.
Jason, have you ever got a chance to listen to our show before?
I listened to one of the episodes after we first got in contact. Yes.
Okay, so you know we kind of like run down an episode, kind of talk about it, and just we interject our thoughts during the episode, and then we just give our kind of final thoughts at the end of it.
Okay.
I'm ready. Which and one we'll did talk you about to? All the good ones, I hope. we'll talk about your book right off the bat.
Okay.
And we'll get I want to get all your information out there to people as well. So, I'll just, ask you for, how they can contact you and all that stuff to get the book and all that good information.
My address is.
Yes, exactly. So, anything anybody else wants to bring up other than Jason's book and Extinction?
God, I hope the next Enterprise episode is better.
Well, it does get a little better, but it's still season three, so it's...
I don't remember season three. I must have blocked it all out. I thought...
See, there's a reason for that.
I don't remember season three being this bad.
Trauma does that to you.
I know, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it wasn't a bad concept.
It's just... I don't know.
Oh, I've got things to say about genocide.
Things to say.
So anything else? Everyone good?
Mm-hmm.
I don't think I have anything specific. There's no real news other than they keep saying they're dropping a new Discovery Season 3 trailer, and it's like 99% the last trailer, so I'm like, how is this new?
Right.
So, I think Saru says something different that wasn't in an older one, so that's like,
you know what it, you know, it all comes down to is because everything's been shut down. It's like there's just really no news. You know, there's no real big information coming through anymore.
I mean, they finished shooting it supposedly, so I mean, why can't they do post production from the home?
Who knows? I don't know. I don't know what they do.
Well, I just know in game development, a lot of times, like, everything's, not everything's remote, but, like, a lot of times they have to, like, use these remote servers to do work. So they're just remoting in, even when they're at work, they're kind of remoting into something else to, like, congregate the work. So I would imagine that would be a similar pipeline in movies and TV with VFX.
Right. Okay. I don't know how they would do it.
I just know that all I can think about now is Grandma's Boy.
Grandma's Boy.
Oh no.
Grandma's Weed.
Right? Oh. Damn it.
He's abandoning us. He's like, I can't take the banter. I'm leaving.
Oh, wait. I'm still here. Can you hear me?
There he is.
Since we're not recording yet, I wanted to give this Yeti one last chance because I can move it around my studio. So you can hear me right now?
Yes.
We can hear you right now.
Yeah. I can try one last trick.
At least we got the ba-at noise. So I have been recording for outtakes so that I can make it into the outtake. Oh, it strikes again.
Oh, wait.